Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Canadian Energy Services and Technology Corp conference call and webcast with respect to the recently announced results for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2016. Presenting for the company today with Mr. Tom Simons, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Craig Nieboer, Chief Financial Officer. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. A question and answer session will follow the end of the presentation. Please also be advised that this conference call may not be recorded or rebroadcast without the consent of Canadian Energy Services. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Mr. Craig Nieboer, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, Mr. Nieboer.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for attending today's call. Before we start, I'd like to note that in our commentary today, there will be forward-looking financial information and that our actual results may differ materially from the expected results due to various risk factors and assumptions. These risk factors and assumptions are summarized in our first quarter MD&A and our first quarter press release, and in our annual information form dated March 10, 2016. In addition, certain financial measures that we will refer to today are not recognized under current generally accepted accounting policies, and for a description and definition of these, please see our first quarter MD&A. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Tom.
Good morning. Thank you, callers. On the call today, we're going to talk about our business in Q1. We're going to describe macro conditions for the drilling fluid space, both in Canada and the U.S., and we'll talk about the macro market conditions for production chemicals and what we believe will emerge in the frac fluid market. We're going to talk about what we've done with the business to return drilling fluids in the second half of 16 back into operating in the black. We're going to talk about how we're going to operate the overall business through this very challenging environment while positioning the business to be the number three oil field service chemical supplier to the North American land market on the other side of this thing. We're going to talk about the numbers. We're going to talk about our appetite for M&A to grow our business, and then we'll take questions. I'll start by saying, because we're founders of the business, I think it's our nature to be builders. So we've protected our ability to win business across the spectrum of what we do, drilling fluids, frac fluids, production chemicals, pipeline chemicals. We've protected our ability to win business, and then more importantly, to hold it by creating value on location through technology and service, which I believe is what allows a relationship, a trust to form with our business and the customer. But we understand that we can't let one part of the business drag the overall business down. So we've done what needs to be done to be able to operate the drilling fluid businesses in the second half of 16 and be able to achieve an acceptable financial result. Effectively, we've cut our way to being able to generate a modest profit in the second half of 16 by holding a third of the Canadian drilling fluid market and about 10% of the U.S. market. We think there's significant upside for our business over the next couple years by selling frac fluids off of the same distribution system that we operate to support our drilling fluid businesses. In AES, we operate our own warehouse and mud plant or invert mud plants. We operate our own network throughout the U.S. Today, we have idled 8 of 13 of those places. To give sort of a backstory on the U.S. drilling fluid market, most callers are familiar with this dynamic from our last call, but I'd like everyone to be level set on the call. Go back about 10 years, the drilling fluid industry viscosifies water with clay and puts a heavy mineral called barite in it to drill horizontal wells. People start drilling the Barnett. They need to drill the build section or elbow in a way that doesn't allow the wellbore to collapse, which happens when you water wet shale. You have a chemical reaction with the water and that hard rock turns to mud and it sloughs. The drilling fluid industry changed from being a minerals company in water to being a chemistry business in highly refined oils. We emulsify brine in diesel or synthetic oil or distillate so that you can maintain the integrity of the wellbore against sloughing, so you can reduce torque and drag or friction to drill a long horizontal section to put these 40 or 50 stages of frac in. As the U.S. market went from 1,800 rigs to under 400 rigs, all of these locations largely contained a tank farm and the mud tanks that were full of these complex oil-based muds. As we call it, big mud ran a looser business in terms of inventory control around these liquid muds. What has happened over the last 6 to 8 months in the U.S. market, where the big three service companies traditionally have had most of the drilling fluid market? When the music stopped, there was no chair for this liquid mud. There's nowhere to take this stuff. Originally, it was the big three service cos that were basically dumping this product on the market at little or no cost, we believe, to get back market share, but also practically to find a solution to what do you do with all this stuff. It's a consumable material that you build to fill the wellbore, fill the mud tank, clean the rock out of the hole, and what your business is mixing chemistry and polymers and minerals into that stuff to make it into a drilling fluid. What we have seen happen over the last 3 to 5 months is there's been a change in who has the market. We're seeing a big red company that didn't buy Baker dumping their liquid mud on the market at no cost. We believe they now have significantly the largest share of the U.S. market. We're seeing the behavior of their biggest competitor not match that. Now, they are not looking to dump inventory to get on work, I guess, to solve a storage problem and maybe hopefully have the work later. So we believe that that isn't a sustainable or long, long-lasting problem. But what has happened is something that used to be a source of revenue and some margin is now no revenue and almost a negative contribution. So it's been very difficult to operate in that space when that's usually 40 or 50% of what the invoice is. The other 50 or 60% are the consumable products you put in the system to make it work. Where we stand today is that we still have about 10% of the market. We remain able to actively service work in the SCOOP stack in Oklahoma, the Eagle Ford, the Marcellus Utica, Midland and Delaware Basin. And we can open our other 8 idled facilities with minimal effort. But as we cautioned listeners last call, we were going to make a strategic decision along the way on whether we could afford to be everywhere and available to everyone, or whether we would need to do what it takes to stay in the black. To give people a sense of context of the cuts or the magnitude, in January 14, we had 600 people that we were paying every day to be in the drilling fluid business on our behalf in the U.S. In January of 2015, we had 350, and today we're below 200, and there's room for further rationalizing if that's where the market takes us. About frac fluids, at AES, it is our stated goal to try to go direct to E&Ps that can hire a pumper to pump other people's products. We're very pleased to say that as of very recently, we're basic in PHPA or polyacrylamide. We can make anionic polymers, which are the backbone for most slick water fracs. So now we have a full product lineup to offer customers. Our proposition is we have the scientists that can customize these for the reservoir, and you don't have to buy materials that have been made and resold 2 and 3 and 4 times. The supply chain focus by the E&P is intense and relentless to drum out reselling in the market. So we think we can take advantage of our relationships with the end user, which is the E&P, That's who we work for in the mud business. That's who we work for in production and pipeline treating. And we think wins some share of the U.S. market directly selling the polymer and chemistry that go into these slick water fracs. We've also got the capability to sell the chemistry that goes into the cross-link jobs, and we can sell the chemistry that goes into energized or nitrogen-based fracking. Our capabilities as AES are the greatest in the Permian and in the Northeast U.S. because of technology, infrastructure, and I believe we're building a good reputation through our database of offsets in those markets that use unique technology that we think one day is of high value to operators as they put rigs back to work. About Canadian drilling fluids, we were able to maintain about 30% of the market in Q1, but activity was very poor and pricing was weak. Going forward, we can break even in that business in the back half of the year if we can operate on about 15 jobs. We think a third of the market is realistic for us. So if the market is somewhere between 75 and 120 jobs, then that's a good outcome for us in the second half in 16. About the highlight part or best part of the business, and I guess it's fair to say if we hadn't made this transition 5 or 6 years ago to try to be a manufacturer of chemicals, polymers, a provider of finished minerals, and then have different sales outlets for the same manufacturing operations, we'd probably be like a lot of other upstream service companies. We'd have a bracket around our number this quarter rather than being able to generate some EBITDA. Treatment points for production chemicals, and of course we take that to our customer in the States through JChem and in Canada through PureChem. Both businesses continue to increase treatment points. We are winning market share when the customer is desperate to lower lifting costs. That is a combination of using less chemistry, but preserving the integrity of the operator's asset, which is their wellbore, their pipeline, or their production. It's a great opening for our business to give better advice, better service, introduce our proprietary or patented chemistries like solid chemistry, like SuperCore. So we are having success. JChem has expanded its Texas market presence over the first quarter. We've expanded into the Illinois Basin. Our Woodland lab is now being equipped with instruments. Our flow loop that can measure friction reduction through these FRs or polymers and fracs, that is now set up in our Woodlands lab. We believe that this is going to expand our ability to do city sales in Houston. So hit on the customer at a higher level. We are starting to see more centralized buying by operators at the wellhead than traditionally because supply chain has got so involved in purchasing decisions of all services. So we think that it's the right time for us to expand our capabilities to create new products and showcase to our customers in Houston that we're committed to science, we're committed to solving their problems. We are seeing significant opportunity both at PureChem and JChem with bigger E&Ps. And to me, I think the reason is the customer is kind of in a tight spot. They need to preserve the integrity of their wellbore pipeline and production, but they're desperate to get lifting costs below what the production yields them. So what I see is an industry that's fighting for survival. In the first quarter, we've had a change from just having desperate customers to having some desperate competition. So you compound those behaviors, and it's tough. There's discounting, but where the opening for our business is the optimizing. The industry is trying to treat production and treat pipelines with less product to lower lifting costs. But the true way to do that is through technology, it's through better application, And that's where we think we beat the competition. We think on the other side of this thing, that allows us to have a bigger share of the market, be more ingrained, have more relationships of trust, and we think truly come out of this the number three provider to the land market in North America for chemicals, polymers, and minerals used in upstream and production. At PureChem in Canada, our expansion continues to basically be west and north. The genesis of our sort of entry or being in the production treating business is we built a blend plant coming out of the last sort of crash for the industry in 08, 09 when the financial markets failed. We recognized or felt that there wouldn't be durability long term of our business if we were just a reseller. We'd spent 10 years building this beautiful retail drilling fluid business in Canada to suddenly see the control taken away from the drilling engineer, drilling manager, and given to purchasing in 09. So we went ahead and built a blend plant in Carlisle, Saskatchewan to build mud chemicals and see how we could do trying to sell production chemicals in Southeast Saskatchewan. Today, PureChem is a profitable business for us. We're making new moves every day into the heavy oil market. We're now doing some trials and surveys in the SAGD market. We are considering establishing some manufacturing in Canada for solid chemistry. For people that don't know our story very well, we've got four chemical reactors in Kansas that allow us to solidify much of the liquid chemistry that us and industry uses to treat wellbores and treat pipelines and turn it into either a pellet or a ball and get that to the problem in a way that a liquid can't get to the problem. An example is a rat hole or bottom of a wellbore that you can't circulate a liquid in. We can drop a pellet that could contain a biocide or a scale inhibitor, and it gets to the source of the problem and then basically dissolves or goes into solution over time and can prevent issues that happen underground. We drop balls in pipelines, they tumble along with the flow of the oil, the pipe has a low spot, often say under a river, there'll be water lying in the bottom of the pipe, that ball will hit that water and go into solution, it'll be a biocide and it'll kill the bacteria that form in that water that eventually create corrosion and cause a hole in that pipe. PureChem is very focused in Canada on trying to sell to the pressure pumpers in Canada. We do not believe long-term that there will be the shift in Canada the way there already is in the US. So we're very focused on the independent pumpers in Canada. We think that part of how we can be successful in that market is that we effectively bought the supply chain to many of those pumpers when we acquired Sialco in December. Sialco is a specialty chemical business, 27 years old, based in Delta, BC, 9 high volume chemical reactors. What we need to do with our business going forward is drive frac sales in Canada by using the chemistries that Sialco has already been putting into the market. We've indirectly been selling to that market by selling to blenders who resell to the pumpers. Coming out of Q1, we're focused on going direct to the pumpers, showing them that we can help their technical efforts to win business against the big three by using a Canadian-based manufacturer of the chemistry. We think that long-term we're going to have some pretty significant success in that market, and I believe long-term we can drive margin in PureChem in the production treating business by using more and more of our own intermediates before we build them into a finished product to get into the wellbore. In general, we're very pleased with our progress at PureChem and JChem. We think we have added upside on the other side of this because we've got the people and the products to lower lifting costs, and that is the name of the game in the oil field service business today. We think part of being number three on the other side of this may include M&A. So we are looking at opportunities to expand our presence in the production and pipeline treating business. But we're going to be cautious like we've always been. Really, it's going into business with someone. So we would want to look at businesses where we believe there's a cultural fit, where people are technical experts, and where they're as invested in our business as we are. We do have, of course, for people that are familiar with us, significant unused throughput at our 45-acre manufacturing facility in Kansas. We have significant throughput remaining in Vancouver. We've got all sorts of throughput available at our barite mill. And now we have our own line of anionic polymers. And I should add for people, these aren't just the backbone of slick water fracs. These polymers are used to clean up water in the oil sands, which is a huge market. So as we make a presence there, dealing with emulsions and corrosion and scale, this can be another outlet to remove or to move a lot of product. I'll now turn the call over to Craig to talk about the numbers, and then we'll be happy to take questions.
Thanks, Tom. Obviously, Q1 results are reflective of the very difficult industry conditions that we're all experiencing. Revenue of $137 million in Q1 2016 versus revenue of $234 million in Q1 2015, year-over-year decrease of 41%. Cash gross margin of $32.6 million in Q1 2016, or 24% of revenue, versus $64.7 million in Q1 of 2015, or 28% of revenue. So with revenues down, with pricing and margin compression, this has pushed many parts of our business into their respective fixed cost bases, resulting in adjusted EBITDA for Q1 to be only $8.8 million versus $41.1 million a year ago, or a decrease of 79%. As Tom mentioned, we undertook many cost reductions and rationalizations in Q1. This is reflected by the $1 million in restructuring costs booked in the quarter. But the benefit of the headcount reductions, compensation adjustments, and mothballing of certain U.S. mud warehouses will only be realized in the coming quarters. We've estimated this time that we've implemented approximately $20 million in annualized savings through our actions in Q1. This will be split between cost of goods sold and SG&A. Overall, as Tom was discussing, corporate headcounts as an entire business have declined. At the start of the year, we were just over 1,400 people. Today, we're just under 1,200 people, with obviously the largest changes to the activity-focused businesses of drilling fluids in Canada and the United States, and some overhead costs in various offices. Balance sheet, we think we're very well positioned in this marketplace still. We have $10 million in cash in the bank still. We have $200 million of positive working capital on top of that. And we're net undrawn on our $150 million senior lending facility. And during the quarter, we renegotiated some of the covenants to give us lots of run room and headroom in our minds. Also, further to note, our high-yield notes are not due until April 2020, also giving us lots of time on that as well. As we wrote in the materials, EBITDA, in our mind, will cover our interest, our dividend, which has been revised, and our maintenance CapEx in 2016. And we will have other cash resources in order to do our expansion capital and look at M&A, as Tom mentioned. At this time, we'll turn it over to the call to questions from the audience.
And at this time, I'll just remind everyone that if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. And the first question comes from Mark Westby with AltaCorp Capital. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Mark.
So a few quick questions this morning. First of all, I'm wondering if you're able to compare on the production chemical side the competitive environment in the U.S. versus Canada right now to some degree?
Well, in production chemicals, you know, I think Canada and the U.S. are alike that way, whereas they are not in drilling fluids. In the Canadian drilling fluid market, our biggest competitor is another Calgary-based business that I think didn't let inventory get away on them. So they run a tight business. Things are really skinny probably for both of us there, but it's a cost-plus business, and you need to get your costs down to be able to work for the customer at a number they'll tolerate. In the U.S., that isn't who we compete with. The behavior of the bigger companies as the industry was booming, it appears that they were loose with inventory. And now they've got to get this stuff out of frac tanks that they've rented and somehow either get it in a well or they're going to pay to dispose of it. So that's literally destroyed the market in the U.S. And it's going to take some time for that to work through the system. And I know your question was about production chemicals. The reason it's different is two things. One, we're not competing with the same companies at the wellhead. We're competing with Baker and Nalco Champion, which is Ecolabs. All the products that all of us use to treat these wells are not commoditized, everything's the same product everywhere kind of stuff. It's specialized chemistry for every reservoir, every well bore. Wells change even within units or fields. So we're all bringing complex chemistry that is built to treat that well or that field. So you don't have low margin stuff like barite you have in the mud business, liquid mud, which now turns out to be a liability rather than an asset you sell in the U.S. market. So we aren't competing with as many businesses, and we aren't competing with people that appear to have too much inventory that they want to get in the ground. So between everything being specialized, which made it a higher margin business in the first place, and I think better run competition, those businesses in both Canada and the U.S. for us have been a little more resilient on margin. And the focus today is on getting lifting costs down so that the operator can keep wells producing and have it make sense for them. So our ability to win business because of unique products and we think better execution as we build out our brand and our business, that's what's carrying the day for us in that market, Mark. What we have seen is that the mom and pop chemical companies that just resell people's stuff, I don't know how they could be making any money at all. So for them to carry on, to carry the best people, solve the problems, I think that impairs them a lot because there's been lots of discounting. And we know what it was like to just be a blender because before we had Kansas, we didn't build our own intermediates.
Okay, great. And then my next question, looking just at the Canadian production chemicals business, where are you seeing the most growth there right now in terms of treatment points, both from an industry perspective as well as from your market share gain perspective?
How that market has worked for us and generally how it appears to us is that conventional production, you've got the big incumbents, but you've got a lot of the sort of local private mom and pop places because the production's a little easier to treat. The wells are long established. People have been able to leave working at Baker and set up a little company somewhere if they live in Drayton Valley and they know the guy at the wellhead. Where it gets really interesting, where it's tougher to get the job done, and where there's much less competition is as you move into these deeper wells that are getting drilled. So the Montney, the Duvernay, some of these new plays, and as you particularly get into heavy oil and the oil sands, there's really only a handful of companies that are trusted to treat that production, deal with that infrastructure and facilities, and that's where our growth is starting to happen. We think we've got maybe as much as 15% of the conventional market in Canada, so we've been pretty successfully establishing a beachhead, a brand. It's allowed us to recruit people, and now we're going after the stuff that's more interesting. There's less competition because it's tougher to get the job done, and the customer only trusts a handful of companies that can truly solve those problems. So the growth is in Alberta. It's west and north.
Okay, great. And then turning to the acquisition side of things, obviously your acquisitions and CapEx focus has been on the production and specialty chemicals of late. With the acquisition of Sialco, do you anticipate expanding it all into other industries outside of oil and gas?
Sialco has legacy business there that we're certainly going to remain committed to. Sialco supplies to cosmetics, pulp and paper, motor lubricants. It's got a very nice recurring high margin business there. We're not going to not move forward in that business. But for us, the massive upside that Sialco creates is we think it helps us be a basic provider of the chemistry to the Canadian pressure pumpers. We think it can improve our margins in California, where we have significant production treating business. There's a lot of logistics wins there. It gives us a second set of scientists to build molecules. We are bringing across chemistries that they make for pulp and paper and looking at them as crossouts or ingredients, call it, we can use in the oil field. And you don't know what you don't know until you have it. And there's a lot of capabilities there. We are ISO certified now in all of our manufacturing and blending operations. So, as opportunity arises, we can probably expand the non-energy business and pull product through Kansas as well. But our focus remains the oil field.
Great. Those are all my questions. Thanks, guys.
The next question is from Steve Kammermayer with Claris Securities. Your line is open.
Oh, hi, guys.
Morning, hey, Steve.
Just on the oil sands here, are you guys going to see any impact in Q2 here from the shutdowns in production due to the wildfires?
Very, very modest because we're barely in the market. We're just doing surveys and trials in the SAGD market. So very minimal impact, but, obviously a terrible situation for the province and the people that live there, and not great for the customer because they've shut all that stuff in. But for us, nominal impact today.
Okay, and then just moving to the frac chemicals here. So as I understand it, there is quite a few drilled but uncompleted wells in Western Canada as well as the U.S. Do you think, given the rise in oil prices since Q1, that we could see a little boost in frac chemical sales from maybe completing these wells in the back half of the year?
I think that makes sense, Steve. You and all the callers are going to know when that happens because the operators are going to try and tap the market to get the money to turn that stuff on. So we're busily trying to get in front of that work before it happens. Hard to say when it happens, but it is going to happen, and we're confident we're going to get a piece of that.
Okay. And then just on the cost cutting, have we seen the bottom in EBITDA margins here then in Q1? You have your cost cutting that'll start to impact margins in Q2 and beyond, but does further pricing declines impact that as well, or have we seen the bottom in EBITDA margins here in Q1?
Well, I think Q2 is worse because the lights are out in Canada in the upstream sector. And all of our cuts, they take time to actually hit the bottom line. So probably Q2 is softer than Q1. I don't know how it can't be. There's no rigs drilling in Canada today, hardly. But I think the back half of the year, we've got sort of people and costs and structure at the right level. We're still in the game in the right places in the U.S. to sell both mud and frac products. And, we got every day is a battle, but we're winning to grow JChem and PureChem. But I think Q2, for all of us in the service sector, if you have any Canadian presence, is softer, Steve.
Okay. That's great. That's all I had, guys. Thanks.
Oh, and about your question about pricing, I know you're off the line there. Hard to say. It depends how desperate the competition gets. We went from the customer fighting to stay alive to now competitors are fighting to stay alive. We're not prepared to subsidize the system anymore and work at a loss on drilling rigs. So, you know, we're going to try and hold our share, but it's hard to say on pricing. It feels like the bottom to me, but I think we've all thought that before, too.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 to ask a question. The next question is from Greg Coleman with National Bank Financial. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks. I'd like to start with just a couple quick modeling questions. In the quarter, we saw a pretty big working capital harvest. I mean, you know, 36 plus. Just wondering, are we likely to see additional working capital in Q2 as activity is obviously slower, Tom, as you just mentioned? And then just how does that play out for the rest of the year? I mean, it's really tough to call on activity, but
yeah,
you know, just wondering what our thoughts are there.
Yeah, so for sure in Q2 there will be continued working capital harvest in particular, which would be normal with Canadian activity on the drill bit side basically grinding to a halt. So Q2 will definitely have working capital harvest, and then I think you hit the nail on the head, Greg. It's what happens in the back half of the year in activity. So, you know, we can't predict that exactly, but you got to expect Canadian rig count's going to go up from the very low number it is in Q2 to something, and as we talked about, and it does feel like the U.S. rig count is at the bottom, and if oil improves a little bit, you've got to expect there'll be some improvement in activity. So those things would result in us having more activity, and probably the back half of the year, you've got working capital required to be put back on the balance sheet.
Does the working capital harvest in Q2, kind of based on what we see today, does it look similar in size to the Q1?
I'm not going to comment on that exactly because it's, you know, starting to give guidance because guys can try to backward the number in. It's going to be a relatively large number, I guess. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's just going to ebb and flow as the activity goes this year, I think, from here.
No problem. On the CapEx side, about $9 million in Q1. We're looking for a full year around 25. Does that make sense?
We have put that in the MD&A, and I think that's where we think it probably comes in at. There are still some projects we could delay, but, you know, long-term, they're things we need for the business, so it will probably be in and around that range, yes.
Excellent. And then just want to finish up with a little bit on the production fluid side there. You know, reading the tea leaves, the increase in treatment points pretty clearly points to the market share increase as you've discussed, but you also talk about offsets, including the, you know, lower demand from existing treatment points and overall pricing pressures. I'm not trying to back into a corner here on minutia, but taking a look at production fluids, did production fluids revenue grow from Q4 with the increased treatment points, or do those offsets you discussed, did that push the growth into negative territory?
Greg, we're not going to segregate drilling fluid chemical revenue from frac, from production treating, but the requirement to get the work is to find a way to preserve the production and preserve the asset with less of the stuff. So all things being equal, between discounting and using less, top line's under pressure. But, you know, that's as close as we'll get to any guidance. What I would say might almost be forward-looking is we know what we've saved in G&A. So if the market is at the bottom and there's a trough that lasts 6 months or a year, if we can hold a third in Canada, a tenth in the U.S. in the mud business, and keep marching slowly but surely up treating production, you know, a year from now, we've got a better business than we do today. And I think we have a real business moving polymer and chemistry into the frac space, which I think has nothing but upside for people in our business because there's this massive inventory of ducks. So we're not going to split the numbers out, but there's pressure on top line because of volume and discounting, but the production still has to be treated.
That's fair. On the treatment points then, is there any consistency in what's causing you to increase those treatment points, whether it's one specific competitor who you're taking them from, or one specific region where you're getting them, or a product that you've got that is contributing to that success, or is it a little bit of everything all over the place?
It's a little bit of everything, but the addressable market for us is getting bigger because the big operators are looking for solutions from someone other than just Nalco and Baker. And it's our job to make them aware that we build the molecules, we've got the best people, we're the most committed, give us a try. So our addressable market, I would say, while on paper, in theory, you can get everything, realistically, we're in play with the big guys now because they know we're for real. And they're looking at anything to get lifting costs down, just like the small guy always did.
Okay, thanks, Tom. That's it for me. Appreciate it.
The next question is from Jason Zhang with Cormark Securities. Your line is open.
Thanks. Morning, guys. Just quickly on the drilling fluid side, is it fair to assume that you would have shown a negative EBITDA in drilling fluids in Q1? Given that the cuts were sort of all back half weighted,
we lost money in the United States in Q1 in the drilling fluids business. Yes.
Okay. And then switching to Canada and the production chemical side specifically, the kind of massive year-over-year growth in treatment points, you know, in a time when drilling activity and broader activity continues to fall, how should we think about that sort of year-over-year growth going forward, and how much would Sialco have contributed to that in the quarter?
Sialco's contribution is negligible. It's a result of momentum we've built over the last couple of years, and that the addressable market's expanding, the bigger E&Ps are viewing us as a credible option. How does it look a year from now? Hard to say, but we're not giving up. The competitor's not going to roll over, but all hands on deck for us, trying to get in front of everyone. We've opened a world-class tech facility in Calgary that I am certain will move chemical because it demonstrates to the customer our commitment to Canada and our capability to solve their problems. So we're running customer schools in there, we're taking the customer there, we're showing them what we're working on. So I like our chances a year from now, but is it twice as many treatment points? Impossible to know.
Right.
A lot of it's also a function, Jason, of bringing on more and more talent to this part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom touched on it earlier. We have the technologies, we have the manufacturing capability, we have the reputation now. So we're a very good place for top-level talent in the industry now to come to, and we've been adding that talent. And just like any business, the talent comes across, and eventually they can bring the work. It doesn't all happen day one. So we think the momentum of gaining treatment points in Canada is going to continue based on the nature of the top talent that we've been able to attract to the business over the last 18 months.
Okay. Great. Thanks, guys. That's it for me.
And again, please press star 1 to ask a question. The next question is from Ian Gillies with First Energy. Your line is open.
Morning, guys.
Hi, Ian.
Gross margins did a nice job nudging up quarter over quarter. Can we primarily assume that was due to a greater proportion of production chemicals mix, or greater proportion of production chemicals revenue?
Well, Ian, we highlighted in Q4 some significant write-offs of drilling fluid muds in the United States that, you know, really hammered the Q4 gross margin. If you kind of normalize that back out, the margin was pretty flat quarter over quarter from Q4 to Q1. And, you know, given that we've had to there, obviously the mix with the lack of activity on drilling has increased to the production side quarter over quarter as well.
Okay, that's helpful. With respect to receivables, I mean, you mentioned in the release that you expect you're going to have to be using some of that trade credit insurance for the remainder of the year. Are you able to provide any sense of what the risk may be at this point in time or how you're thinking about that risk right now?
Well, I mean, obviously that's a risk that everybody in the industry has, from the banks to the service companies. I mean, it is a very difficult environment. We saw, you know, very little bankruptcies in 2015, and we're seeing an acceleration of those in 2016. The write-off that we've highlighted was a Canadian write-off because we did not insure our Canadian receivables for a number of reasons. We think that, you know, on the production side of the business, there's a little bit less risk. You're continually providing service, and if anything gets stuck in a bankruptcy, it's the current receivable, but the ongoing service gets paid for. It's more challenging on the drilling side where, you know, guys have maybe tried to drill some wells to, you know, get them over the hump, and if they don't turn out or if, you know, their other situation, then you're stuck with that receivable in a bankruptcy and there's no ongoing work to offset it. So very focused on that, but obviously as the activity has fallen off, call it the receivables that are focused towards the drill bit activity is also falling off as a percentage. So the risk is probably reducing from that perspective, but the risk of the customers, is some of them, is probably going up. We're comfortable that our trade credit insurance in the U.S. insulates us based on our customer base from a catastrophic one-time event that would be quite damaging to us. And then in Canada, we just have to keep managing it very granularly and very carefully.
Okay. No, that's very helpful. Thanks very much. And then along the same lines with the production chemicals, or talking about the production chemicals business, historically, you've highlighted that's tended to be a stickier business with and winning market share has been more challenging. And given your customers' desires to lower lifting costs, has that behavior really changed quite dramatically over the last, call it, 3 to 6 months?
Well, I guess I've said, I think twice, we think our addressable market is expanding as we emerge as sort of, we think, number three option for the industry. And yeah, I guess that puts what we have at risk, but we're professionals. We're all over our existing business. And I'd say the results speak for themselves for us. I'd say we're outperforming our competition, or our treatment points would be going down because the customer votes with their wallet. So I think that's a manageable risk for us on what we have, and we like our chances on what we don't have. But could it be transient? Yeah. What isn't going to change is that someone's treating it. It's just our job to make sure it's us.
Okay. And then the last one for me, on a G&A perspective, are you guys able to provide any detail around, I guess, what percent of your cash G&A would be in U.S. dollars? Just trying to get a sense of, as the U.S. dollar moves around a bit here and with the cost savings, how that number may change, just trying to marry up those two items.
Yeah, I don't have an answer off the top of my head for that, Ian. I mean, if you want to talk afterwards, maybe I can give you some more guidance on that. I just don't have those numbers off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Thanks very much. I'll turn it back over.
And again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you'd like to ask a question. And showing no further questions at this time, we'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
Well, we'd like to thank callers for their time today. We'd ask people for their patience and trust. We're going to get our business through this. I'll say that to our employees as well. It's tough, but we're going to get through this. We're going to take as much of our team through it as we can. You all know the marching orders. Be a source of revenue or a way to reduce costs for the customer or prepare the invoice, because other than the scientists, there's nothing else for anyone to do in a service space. We're available for conversations, of course, directly with people, and think that on the other side of this, we're building a better business that will emerge as the clear number three in the oil field service space. We'll wrap it up. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect. Thank you.